You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where Boob Armor is fully supported. Because boobs are awesome and should be protected at all costs. Get your mammograms, ladies. I don't know why this just became a breast cancer awareness advertisement. I mean, I think that was last month in the NFL. But what this is going to become an advertisement for is my book. I'm your host, Justin Elmozeski. And if you are listening to this episode on Tuesday, November 17th or later, my novel, The Cut, has been released. All you have to do to buy it in any form, PDF, EPUB, Mobi, paperback, or signed paperback if you want a paper in a personal message for me, is go to themidside.com/thecut. Again, my novel is out. Go to themidside.com/thecut to learn more about it and order in any format. Now let's bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Justin, you are not allowed to do this as my personal message.
William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
Although that might make it a collector's edition if you do.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
So hello, hello, everyone. Yeah, it's been a great week. I got to do some training this week. Went to a hotel and GASP, conducted training with six other people. That was the managertools.com guys, the effective manager and effective communicator. Been wanting to do this training for a long time, 2-day thing. And it was really, really cool. Got to meet Mark Horstman and anyone. I'm sure there's some listeners of this show that listens to their podcast. And it was just great to hear a bunch of stories and do a bunch of the practical practices with the guy who created it all. So it was really cool.
Oh, that's exciting to hear. When you said doing some training at first, I was like, we need more context, because I didn't know what the training meant.
Yeah, but it's also odd. The last 3 days I've been putting some logs in the fireplace. It's been nice, frigid 50 degrees at night here in California. Today the high 83 degrees. So
Global warming.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's great. I love the fall weather in California. I can't decide whether it's winter or not.
There's no winter in California. It hasn't even got that cold in Florida. So if you don't like the cold at all, just move to Florida. It's got to like 59 in the morning. That's it. All right. Let's move on to talk about all this craziness that happened this week in our lives, all the different stuff, follow up on some stuff we were talking about last episode in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. As always, if you'd like to support us, we greatly appreciate it, and you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode, Locals is per month. You can go to either of those directly, or you can just go to themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. William, I wanted to touch base with you again about the conversation we ended Life on the Midside with last week, because yeah. I think we kind of were missing each other with what we were saying, and we didn't quite come to an understanding. And I thought a listener, a midsider in Discord, had a really good comment that really more precisely was driving at what I was driving at. Here's the comment. I'm going to read it. When I was listening to how you were describing it, it took more as secondhandedness. Oh, I should probably give more context to the listeners. I'm sorry, listeners. That was stupid on my part. If you want to cancel all your subscriptions, please don't. I could understand why, though. No, I'm talking about the drinking conversation. So for those who haven't listened to the last episode or those who need a reminder, we were talking about how I went to Disney Springs and I saw a group t-shirt that I was assuming they were wearing at the Epcot Food and Wine Festival that said, "Have yourself a merry little cocktail." And I said, I find these t-shirts incredibly unintelligent and immature, and I think they're an example of accepted alcoholism in our culture. So here's the Discord comment. "When I was listening to how you were describing it, I took it more as secondhandedness because it's trying to convey a certain social status. I'm elegant and refined because I drink cocktails, plebe. I picked up mixing cocktails at home as a hobby as an extension to my cooking hobby because I find it fun to learn how flavors interact and balance out each other. So if I were to wear a drinking shirt, it would likely have more to do with the mixing than the drinking. It's also why I miss going to bars and talking to bartenders about that stuff." So what I find interesting about this comment by the Midsider is he's differentiating between treating the alcohol as a productive activity where you're creating and then enjoying, and simply broadcasting to other people that you are enjoying or consuming. And I just don't find the act of consuming, especially consuming something that does damage your body and does have negative effects, I don't find that worthwhile to broadcast to people.
Yeah.
I think it's a way of signaling a social virtue that isn't a social virtue. It's the same thing where you see someone wearing marijuana paraphernalia, marijuana socks. And I think I told the story of the woman working at Dunkin' Donuts with the marijuana leaf mask. Like, that's the problem I have.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I completely resonate with this. I think I don't remember if I mentioned the show, but I definitely added to the conversation here on Discord. That's where a lot of my enjoyment comes in, is finding flavors that people, you know, I love mixing drinks for other people, because I like helping them discover new flavors that they enjoy, right? Like something they might not have considered before, or some unique flavor that they've never, you know, because of the balance of the cocktail, that they've never experienced. That's the cool part to me. And that's how I got, same thing. Cooking got me sort of into the cocktail side. And I completely resonate with this.
Well, and the cooking is a good example, because I would never, think negatively or get annoyed at a cook who posted what he or she cooked on Instagram, on social media, or wore shirts saying they were a cook and that they love doing these recipes and things like that. But I hate people who post what they eat. It's like, congratulations, you were able to go to a restaurant and buy food. Congratulations, you did a basic human thing. I just find it uninteresting. And I think this is why, William, even though I hate drinking, you know, I'm straight edge, I've never drank in my life, and why I think, you know, drinking is bad and alcohol, you know, accepted alcoholism and all that, why I've never disliked bartenders. I've always liked bartenders for two reasons. One, they're providing a service and it's a skill. And two, have you ever really met a bartender who is like a total shithead? Most bartenders I've met have a modicum of benevolence to them because they have to for their job.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't exactly always get to put up with the best people. So they definitely have to have an overall positive attitude about people, or the occasional stream of drunk assholes would drive them out pretty quick.
Well, exactly. Although I do think there is an interesting conversation to be had, not in this episode, but to be had in our culture about, are we too permissive at bars? Is there a place for a bar where, you know, as opposed to most bars now, you can get shit-faced and then they throw you out. And then we saw last year, or a couple of years ago, there were stories coming about sober bars, right, where they didn't serve alcohol. Is there a place for an in-between where they say, okay, we'll only serve you, you know, four drinks at most, depending on how big or small you are, right? Because I don't want to say, like, you know, The Rock goes in there and he should be limited the same way, like, Chloe Kim, the snowboarder, should be limited, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they would have some sort of contextual adaptation there. But I think there's a conversation to be had if that kind of bar establishment should exist. Because we talked about this before with businesses, where businesses don't operate off of principles or values anymore. They just operate off of purely, the only value is maximizing profits. So maximizing profits would be, oh, let's pour alcohol down your throat until you're a drunk barfly, rather than saying, oh, we want to provide you reasonable enjoyment. So I think there's an interesting conversation to be had there.
Yeah.
But let's follow up on some other stuff too, right? There's some other stuff I want to talk about in a second here. Some other pretty cool stuff I want to talk about in a second. But next, I want to follow up on the election results again with you. And again, it's not about the results of the election, right? I actually find myself caring very little about Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Like, to me, I see flashes of headlines, Williams, about what Biden's doing and things like that. And I'm like, it'll happen or it won't. And then I'll have to adapt based upon if it happens or not. But it doesn't, I don't click the articles. I don't want to know anymore. Like, there's one thing that I'll get to in a second. But the thing that really affects me the most is people's reactions to it. From my perspective, William, and I want to know what you think. I think people are overly invested in all of this. I think they're caring too much. I think it's to a level of irrationality. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, part of it could be, the lockdown and the isolation. I've found even myself, I've gone in the last month, I've gone on a couple dates and found that even myself, like, my social skills have gone down a bit, right? And what I mean by that is I'm less adaptive to other people's, like, communication style and things like that, right? Like, I'm just not as practiced at being a good listener or steering the conversation socially. Like, if even that is something that can happen because of this extended isolation. Like, imagine what that's doing to people's coping and the way that they're valuing the information that they're getting in everyday life, right? Because in everyday life, people can easily fall down into that Twitter rabbit hole, right? There's no real life to pull them out. And so they can just get in this loop and get all caught up in everything and think that it matters. It's not that it doesn't matter, right? It's that you only want to think about evil long enough to deal with it, right? And voting, if you think that's something that was to deal with it, I mean, that part's done, and there's no other thing that really day to day you can't affect the court cases, you can't affect the protests, those things. There's nothing really you can do there other than live your life, right? And call it out when you see it, but you don't need to go out and be so emotionally attached to these outcomes when it's, like you said, in your life, does it really matter? There's a couple things that does, right? And we'll talk about, I'm sure, one of those. But should you really tie your happiness so strongly into this? I can imagine people in DC get a little more involved in this, right? Like, when I lived in Baltimore, you get pulled into sort of the politics side of things because of, you're so close, you're just in proximity, and that stuff does have effect to your daily life. But, like, are you really going to tell me, like, is anything going to change or is anything going to change fundamentally in the next couple of weeks? Probably not, right? There's nothing really that will go on, and I'm sure people will tell me if there's something I should pay attention to. But right now, it's sort of getting into the... there's a way people get overly emotionally invested in sports as well, right? Every time a team wins, I think we mentioned this before. Every time a team wins, there's someone that burns a couch, right? Or there's riots occasionally and things like that, right? Like, this is a sign of the irrational side of being overly invested. So it's not saying you shouldn't invest in these things, and especially if it's an interest to you. It's actual value to you, but it's good to look at it and say, like, is this time I'm spending giving me value, right? Is there things that are practically improving in my life because of this emotional and time investment in this? And if there's not, yeah, you gotta think about that. And I think we see a lot of examples, Justin. You've sent one to me on Instagram of some overly invested people.
Yeah, and I think you give a good explanation for that. I think maybe it'll explain that, but we'll play in a second here. But first, I want to distinguish between what you said, because I think you brought up a really good point about the sports, about being the overly invested in sports and it being an interest, but not being overly invested in it. Because you're talking to somebody right now who's cried when the Patriots won the Super Bowl. But there's a difference between having that emotional reaction and then dwelling on it. It would be like if the Patriots won the Super Bowl and then all I did for the next 6 months or even a week to 2 weeks was think about that and create content about that and make that the center of my life. And that's coming yeah. from somebody who, I mean, I'm a pretty big football fan. I'm a pretty big Patriots fan. I mean, right before we recorded this, I watched the Buccaneers just to see Tom Brady and Gronk play. And then I'm going to watch the Patriots game later tonight after we finish recording this and after I edit this. So I spend a lot of time on football for the Patriots, for Clemson. But still, even with something like that, that's such a value to me, I still put it in its proper place. I don't let it overdo my life. And if I find it doing that, I get some distance from it so I can properly adjust myself. If there's a bad loss, I've learned not to let it take over my life, that it's hindering other things. And I think that's the way people handle politics. And maybe it's what you're saying. Maybe it's what you're saying. You know, it's not just an interest to you, to them. They've fallen down this Twitter rabbit hole or just this rabbit hole because they're disconnected from reality. I mean, it certainly would explain this video that I sent you. I mean, what I want you to do, right? I want you to play the first bit of it, and then I want you to stop it and tell me what you think it sounds like. Right? What do you think it sounds like this is about? Now, this video, this is a couple singing in their car, and they look like, honestly, they look like they could live like in Michigan or the South or something like that, right? They look like a pretty blue-collar couple, right, William?
Yeah.
Yeah, they look pretty blue collar, which was part of what took me back when I saw this video for the first time. And also, they're parodying a song. They're parodying an old song called Nobody by Keith Sweat. So I just want you to play the first little bit, William. And then I just want to talk about like what it sounds like it's about at that point.
All right, here we go.
I can't believe it.
All right. All my dreams came true. I can't believe it. He's sitting in the car with his wife or girlfriend, presumably. What does it sound like they're singing about, William?
They're singing about love or having a baby or...
That's what I thought. I thought they got engaged or something. I was like, well, this is a neat engagement announcement. Like, I'm not one for, like, I'm going to make an announcement publicly on a video or even have a cameraman there or videographer there for the proposal. But I was like, this is a pretty neat announcement. What did you think when you saw it?
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. I thought they're having a baby. That's what I thought for some reason. I don't know why my mind went there, but I was like, oh.
Well, either works. It seemed like, you know, that's pretty cool. Like, hey, woman of your dreams, you're starting a family. All that stuff's cool. Now, play it again. Play it now, and let's hear what he does sing about.
I can't believe it. All my dreams came true.
The disconnect between man. All my dreams came true and then the next line is America voted. How can a person look at themselves in the mirror after writing that line? And then the next line, America voted and the country turned blue? Are these people fucking delusional? This is why I think your explanation, William, is so intriguing to me. Because, okay, Joe Biden's going to be president. He won the election. I don't want to get into any cheating arguments. Even if they did cheat, which I believe they did. I believe both sides cheat. The system's broken. That's why I don't vote. Fix the fucking system. Regardless, he's going to be president. But anyone who looks at the electoral map and the popular vote map, where the difference in the popular vote is the population of the city of Los Angeles, do people really think that means that if the whatever your party is that got elected, that turns the entire country to your party?
I don't know, man. I finished that book, Cynical Theories, James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose. And the more I think about it, like, it's just a gem, right? And the more I think about it, the more it integrates with that thing I've been saying, like, for the last couple of years about how social justice is a religion, right? This sounds like, now that you hear the second verse, this is a revival song, right?
Yeah. Well, that is
that's what it is. You're singing at a revival, right? This is what it is. And it's so, like, I know I am hypersensitive to those things, right? Because, you know, partly because of, you know, where I grew up and how I grew up, I'm very sensitive to this kind of religious thinking, religious style thinking, right? And it's just so like a bloodhound. I can't move from that scent, right? And this is exactly that. You're tying your happiness into, first of all, something you really have no control over, right? Which is always dangerous. And then, like, dangerous to you psychologically, but then also it's just a fantasy, right? The whole country turned blue, like,
right?
It's just a fantasy,
right? And that's the thing, right? So I get that they're doing a parody song, right? And I get the original, you know, the original song by Keith Sweat goes "Nobody," and then when you hear this woman sing later on in the video, she goes "Joe Biden," and that's kind of clever. Right. If you want to make a parody song about Joe Biden of nobody and do that. But the fact that their way of executing it is to talk about all my dreams came true and the country turned blue. I get that they're trying to rhyme. I get that. The point is the execution. That's what they thought in their head to write about in regards to Joe Biden being elected. I could write a better parody song.
But Justin, imagine. We've gone through phases. You know, we had to stop doing Woke Joke because the time between when we would discover the story and when the joke story would become woke was before we could even, you know, run the game and
sure,
and publish
it
out.
It was that and not that Daniel left the show, but okay, we'll go with that.
That was the reason. But here's the thing, Justin. This is an example of them creating the joke before even the hard times could do it. Imagine if this had come out before the election as a parody, like, yeah, from Hard Times or yeah. Babylon Bee or something. It would have been hilarious, right?
Yeah, middle-aged white couple sings in car a parody song in car about Joe Biden being elected.
Yeah,
that sounds like a Hard Times. You're right. That sounds like a Hard Times headline. 100%.
It would have been hilarious, right? But they're like, we've come. It's getting a little timey-wimey in here.
Though, it is hilarious, William. It is hilarious. I want you to play this again, and I want everyone to listen. And I don't want them to be angry. I just want them to hear the shift from "All My Dreams Came True" to "America Voted." It just, think of how funny that is. So just play that again. We'll stop it after the "America Voted."
I can't believe it.
You can't write better parody. You can't write. I mean, that's fucking funny.
Yep.
There is a more insidious side to Joe Biden being elected, though, right? And the insidious side, I want to ask you what your opinion is, because my opinion is he is going to do this. I've started to see his advisors seeding the idea that we could. I think I put that in the text thread, the group chat, or the group text for Welcome to the Midside. That they said that we could control the virus, coronavirus. We could control coronavirus if we locked down for 4 to 6 weeks.
Isn't that what we were preached in April-ish time frame?
Right.
Well, I mean, right. February, well, March, it was slow the, you know, like flatten the curve, and then it became, well, if we just do it harder, better, faster, stronger, then we'll stop it.
If we're going to run on the Daft Punk principle of politics when we run for office, Daft Punk, yeah. Harder, faster, stronger. Yeah, and that's why I was laughing at the debates too, right? Because I knew this was going to happen, right? Joe Biden was like, it's all Trump's fault because he locked down the economy and he killed the economy. And now it seems like Joe Biden is going to do that. I personally think he's going to get in office and then, like, a week or two later, lock us all down. What do you think is going to happen, William?
I think he will try, but thankfully, living in a republic, he won't be able to. Because states will just defy him. I think Texas has already said they would just defy that.
You're telling me it's a good thing I moved to Florida.
Yeah, it is. I mean, California is never going to be unlocked.
Yes.
Outside of some, you know, Supreme Court case, it's never going to be unlocked.
Leave California.
I think the thing is, you know, I posted this in Discord and, you know, of course, don't jump over to this until you finish our show. But the Trigonometry, for those of you listening along, podcast has had some great interviews, and it's from the UK. So like it's a UK perspective, but they talk about the justifications for another lockdown out there. And it's basically not rational. Right. And, now that may be super controversial, and I'm sure people could debate me, but the issue is the debate is not being allowed out there. Right. Like immediately, if you say something like, hey, locking down may not be rational, you're immediately with climate change, you're a climate denier, right? You're a virus denier, right? We're using that language about that. And there's no opposition to it. I think that at least with Biden proposing another lockdown, there may be opposition to it. Just knee-jerk reflex reaction from certain states, like Texas has already said, and certain politicians, right? Saying like, hey, you know, we got to think about the economy. We've got to think about, you know, people's lives. Like it's one thing to say, hey, everyone, you should wear a mask, do these things, and we will slow the spread of the virus, versus do these things or we will kill you. Right. Yes. There's a huge difference there. I think we've lost that. Right. We've lost that saying like, hey, I can say, hey, I could be against mask mandates and still be wearing to wear a mask, right? Like those aren't mutually exclusive, and in certain contexts I will, you know, absolutely, if there was no mask mandate, I would still wear a mask in certain contexts. They're like, you know, it makes sense in the restaurant preparing food, it makes sense if you're going to go visit a nursing home or a hospital or something with the current conditions. But the mandate, that's the thing, right? Shutting down the businesses, picking and choosing winners and losers. That's the thing that's dangerous. And if you can't separate that out, right? That's the part that I'm calling irrational, by the way. The fact that, we're saying, hey, you can't gather in your house to have Thanksgiving, because you might, you know, because we say so. And we can have peaceful protests, and that'd be totally cool, right?
It's not just Thanksgiving. It's Christmas, too. I saw there was an interview with Fauci, and they asked him about it, and he wouldn't answer directly. So they might try to cancel Christmas, too, which may be the last straw in this country. That may be the last straw.
We shall see.
You need to remind me on Tuesday, or someone needs to remind me on Tuesday, November 17th, to listen to that episode of that podcast you sent, because I keep forgetting. And someone needs to remind me to listen to it when I'm lifting at the gym. Maybe after you buy your copy of The Cut, you can post in Discord to tell me, hey, listen to that podcast William sent in your group text.
And go ahead and flex that bicep there, Justin.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? You got that? You really got that drop?
Oh, I couldn't help myself.
Dude, when he did that, I was like, oh my God, really? Really? Really?
I think he was flirting with you.
He wasn't. He was like, show me off like I was a shiny new toy. Like, yep. Hey, look at the Snyder fan we have. Hey, look at the Snyder fan we have.
Yep.
So that's our last thing we're going to get to. That was a good transition, though. But I wanted to talk about something first before that. I wanted to talk about an experience I had this past week, which was pretty cool for me. So if people aren't aware, you know, I started teaching English in high school here in Florida, and I'm also an assistant wrestling coach. Now, I wrestled for 5 years. I wrestled for 8th grade to 12th grade, and I was a pretty decent wrestler. I don't want to say I'm a great wrestler. I don't want to say I'm a terrible wrestler. You know, I won some stuff. I won some tournaments. I have some trophies, right? But I was never, like, spectacular, right? Now, this team at this school, like, they had two kids last year won the state championship, and they have a history of having a state champion every year. And these are kids who wrestle, most of them, a lot of them wrestle from the time they were younger. You know, I haven't been on the mat in a very long time, right? Since my, there was a brief club team at my undergrad, and I wrestled for a little bit, you know, a couple times there. But I haven't been on the mat since then. But, you know, I'm still in pretty good shape. So I've been on the mat, you know, training them, helping them learn moves, but I haven't actually, you know, wrestled with them. They call it wrestle live when you practice. They say, you know, go live. Just try to take each other down. And I haven't done that, even when they, like, needed an extra person to go against everybody else. And one of the coaches said that to me the other day. You know, this guy who, you know, this other coach is pretty impressive. Like, he was a four-time state champion in Minnesota. I'm like, this is part of why I was sort of intimidated by all this stuff, because I was like, holy crap, these guys are really good. I'm going to embarrass myself. How am I going to coach if I wrestle these kids and then they beat the crap out of me? How am I going to coach if I lose? So I didn't want to wrestle against these kids. And then, you know, he asked me the other day and I was like, yeah, you're right. I probably should. I'm not going to lie. I've been kind of like insecure about it. And he was like, okay, who cares, whatever. So then one day in practice this week, at one point they were wrestling live, and what they do is they tend to like wrestle for a couple minutes and then swap partners. And the coach just threw me in against this kid. He was like, okay, wrestle this kid. And he wanted me just to hand fight the kid because the kid claimed he weighed 180. But I found out that the other day, one of the other coaches was like, what do you weigh now? And he's like, 180. And he was like, dude, I saw your form. You were like 193. You know, I'm like, I'm 150, right? I'm like 153 yeah. If I eat a pizza and a burger. And that's with my muscle mass, right? So if I were really cutting in wrestling, I'd be cutting down to like 140, 135. So the coach throws me in against this kid. And I'm like, I literally look at him. I go, don't destroy me. He goes, you don't destroy me. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, you realize I'm talking about you being like 30 pounds heavier than me, right? And so I wrestled against the kid. And you know what? Even he had 3 years of experience in this really good program. And I took him down. You know, he ended up taking me down and like throwing me around like a rag doll at one point. And when I got up and got away, he accidentally hit me in the face and I felt it. And like some of the people sitting on the sideline were like, we thought you were going to get like knocked out when he hit you in the head. But he looked at me after like he accidentally hit me, and he didn't even realize he accidentally hit me. And we're, you know, we're facing each other and we're like getting ready to go again. He's like, you look excited. And it was just like, yeah, it's been a while. And you know how, like, I don't know if you've ever played sports, William, you, like, get hit in the face and it, like, amps you up?
Yeah.
And I just, yep. I hadn't had that feeling in a very long time. And I forgot the feeling of efficacy, of being able to do something. And just even though, you know, I'm nowhere near the best wrestler in that room, and there's, you know, there's things I can teach them, but I won't be able to beat these kids, a lot of them, like the really good kids. The efficacy of knowing that I can go out there and I can acquit myself well. And I can compete, even my age is a lot older than these kids. Yeah. It gave me this feeling of efficacy that even carried when I went to the gym later. I had a really good lift when I went to the gym just because I had that feeling of, hey, I can still do this and I can still be physically strong. And I was also worried about my back. Like sometimes I've tweaked my back at the gym and then like it hurts for like a week. And I thought if I wrestled again, I would hurt it. And I was able to get out without an injury. And now I sound like I'm 80 years old, but
yeah, yeah.
It just, do you know what I'm talking about? That feeling of efficacy when you actually do something that you value.
Yeah, and I think that's great.
It propels throughout your life.
I think that's that's a great thing for folks to look for in their own life this week is to find that feeling. That's a great sort of like meditation for the week, is like, look out for that feeling and use that to fuel up your other endeavors. You know, that feeling of, I can hold my own sort of feeling, right?
Right. You can hold your own and you can do it in something that you value. And I think that's the other thing, is it's like, it's a measuring stick because it's something you value. For me, being mm-hmm. able to do that in wrestling when the kid was a lot younger, he was a lot bigger, and that it's something that I value so highly. Like there's nothing else like amateur wrestling. Like there's never been anything in my life, William, that ever pushed me as hard as amateur wrestling did physically. Yeah. I wouldn't say necessarily mentally, but the combination of physical and mentally, and just like that feeling of being drained after a workout. And there's a certain smell with it that you work out so hard and sweat so much. The fact that I was able to still be okay in that situation where I am in life, because I value that so highly, I think that's where that feeling came from. And it really, it sort of pivoted my entire week. And now I'm going to keep, when there's an opportunity and when there's a need, get on the mat with these kids and actually wrestle. Even if I get beat, if I get beat, if I do well and I'm able to survive, then I'll still feel good about myself for, you know what, doing what I love.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I it's been a while since I've played any sort of organized sports. You know, I did the kickball stuff recently before the lockdown. But very similar with me with music. You know, I played with a Civil War reenactment band. We recorded. I was with them when they recorded an album, and I was playing with all these real professionals, right? And it was the same sort of, it's what you're describing, the same sort of feeling I felt. I was like, man, I don't know. Like going in, I was like, I don't know if I can hold my own here, right? Because I am an amateur, right? When it comes to music. But getting, it had been so long since I played with a group that was that musical. And what I mean by that is there's sort of this there's this very sort of spiritual zone you get in when you're playing in an ensemble where you're not just playing the music, right? You're not playing the music that's on the page. You're focused on the director and the emotion that you're trying to create with the music. You're just operating on that other level of music. And just being, you know, it was a 3 days we were recording, right? Like 8 hours a day and with breaks, obviously. But just being able to go in and out of that zone over and over again, and the sort of,
we need a drop for that one.
the sort of emotional exhaustion at the end. I remember a couple times, we would go outside. It was a hot day. We were up in upstate New York recording in this church with awesome acoustics, and just going out and laying on the grass against a tree, and all of us just be like, "Whew, that was a good one." You know, like we really nailed that.
Did you smoke cigarettes too?
Almost. I mean, it was amazing to be able to get there again, right?
Yeah, and I think the situation you pointed out is great, because I think it parallels what I was describing, the situation I was in. And I think we put a lot of emphasis on ability, in the sense that there are places you shouldn't go if you don't have the same level of ability. And I think what you learned and what I've been experiencing, just watching these kids wrestle and watching this coach teach, is I think even if you're not as good, if you love it and you're around these people, you will get better just by being around them.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's a lesson to take away from life, is you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You don't have to be the best person in the room. But if you're the most passionate, or if you truly love something deeply, and it's not even a comparative thing, as long as you truly love it and you truly want to be there, you will be better just for being there. And I think we have another example of that. The next thing I want to talk about, William, is something crazy that happened to me. So I got a message in the middle of the week. I got a message in the middle of the week from one of the vloggers within the Zack Snyder community, from my buddy Dave the Film Junkie. And he sent me a screenshot of his most recent call log. And on it said Zachary Snyder. And I was like, what? And I was just like, I thought he was just bragging to me, right? I thought he was like, look, I talked to Zack Snyder. And I was like, oh, I was just super happy for him, right? I was just like, that's really cool. Again, like, I'm just in the room with people that I think are cool, that like the same things I like. And then he says to me, oh, he's going to come on my vodka stream on Friday night. So Dave the Film Junkie, he does this hangout thing every Friday night where he has a bunch of his, he usually has one feature guest. And then after that, he has a bunch of his friends hang out with him via, you know, I hate how we use Zoom now, William, as like a fucking catch-all. Like, not every video conference online is a Zoom. You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
But we use it like Kleenex now or Band-Aid. So, you know, it's a video conference where we're all on video live streaming to each other. And this week he has Zack Snyder. And he tells me, he goes, I have a plan and I want to have you on. And I'm going to have people go up in pairs, and you and Chris Wong Swenson, who I also, if you look, there's an interview I did with Chris about my book. I want to have you guys on, and I want to have you guys ask questions to Snyder. And I was like, dude, if I go on, I'm going to ask about Fountainhead. He's like, well, good. I want to know about that, too. So on Friday night, William, I was on a live stream, and I directly asked Zack Snyder. I directly asked him specific questions about his adaptation of The Fountainhead. Like, is this real life?
It's awesome.
Is this real life, William?
Yeah. Very exciting.
Were you able to catch the stream at all?
I didn't see it live, but I did watch the part that you were on after, before I even went to pull the clip. So, yeah, it was really neat. That's why I knew the flex drop was going to be.
Yeah, well, that was part of it. Is after Dave like let me ask about Sucker Punch and Fountainhead, and you know, have a little bit of a conversation with Snyder. He then was like, because I have Zack Snyder's production company logo tattooed on my arm. If anyone follows me on Instagram or Twitter, it's my avatar right now. Me flexing to show it, and he was like, flex, flex, and I was like, dude, really, like. I didn't know if Snyder would be weirded out or not by it, but whatever. Did you have any impressions of what you watched?
I think every time I hear him be interviewed, I'm always struck by how deeply he's thought about things, right? I think people listen to the way he talks and draws conclusions about things, and you know, it's just clear that he's thought a lot about these things, right? And I think that's just the main impression I get every time I hear him, and it definitely comes out in this interview as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a great lead-in to the drop we have here. So I asked him about, is it going to happen? And he said he doesn't know. I asked if it was a series or a TV show, and he didn't answer that directly, although he did imply an answer. And then I asked him, you know, besides... you know, Howard Rourke laughing naked on a cliff at the beginning, what other iconic images is he looking forward to adapting? And then he gave this answer.
Well, can I ask you about the 700 pages? Can I ask you, besides obviously the opening with Rourke standing on the cliff naked and laughing and everything, what do you think are the most iconic images that you wanted to bring to the screen for Fountainhead?
It's every page. I mean, I think that, like, you know, for me, there's just the struggle is so fun to kind of dig into. You know, I think people you need to keep that in a mythological sort of realm in order to, like, let it be mythological. You know, as soon as you try to sort of think about it in practical terms, sure, you can spin yourself out with it. But I think if you keep it in mythological terms, it's really fun, and there's a lot of great lessons. So, yeah, but it's a good.
So he said every page, William.
Yeah, every page.
Do you realize that means he's basically storyboarded every page of The Fountainhead?
Yeah. Well, when he said 700 pages, I was thinking storyboard. But, like, you imagine he's got a bunch of storyboards, like, in a closet, just waiting, bringing them out every pitch. I mean, like,
well, look. He does leather-bound books for every... He shoots what he draws, he's famously said. So he has leather-bound books for each of his movies, where he doesn't shoot from the script. He reads the script, and then he draws it, and then he shoots from that. And that's what he did. He has over 700 pages of storyboards because he went through and he storyboarded every page of The Fountainhead.
Yeah.
I would pay just to read those. Yeah. Like, if it never comes out one day, I would say before I die, Zack Snyder, I would like to at least just read those just to get an idea of where you were coming from and what you were thinking and how you were going to show it. Mm-hmm. The other thing that really struck me is the way he was evasive with his answer, but the way he framed it. So it was clear to me he didn't want to say anything specific about the struggle, right? But when he says the word the struggle, it's clear he knows what the conflict is and what's at stake in the book. It's 100% clear. This is not a man who's going to go against what the story's about. If he was going to, he would have said it here, right? Instead, he just calls it the struggle, which was to me like saying we both know what the struggle is. Then he makes sure to say, without saying the word romantic, saying romanticism, mythological. And I think that's what a lot of people miss about his movies, and they miss about Rand's writing. It's not meant to be exact reality.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be portraying what would really happen in the real world. If you really did the things Rourke did, especially at the end of the book, right? It wouldn't happen the way it happens. You can't just do what Rourke did at the end of the book and then give it a giant speech and everyone's like, oh, it's okay. It's fine. Right? It doesn't work that way in reality. No. But in the mythology, in the romanticized version of reality, it works. It's the same thing with Atlas Shrugged, right? Where you've got John Galt on the table at the end being tortured. Like, you can't just, like, by will not be tortured. Right? You can to a certain extent, but everybody has a limit where their body just gives out. It's the same thing. And the fact that he framed it like that, it just shows to me, I don't really need to have a debate anymore about Zack Snyder. That me having that exchange with him, and even prior I talked to him, I said, you know, you keep bringing up the why, and I appreciate that. That's what drew me to Man of Steel. And then he talked about why he did the why in all of Man of Steel and everything. I don't think I need to have I don't need to have these conversations with people anymore. It's very clear, is it not?
Yeah, very clear. And I encourage everyone to hopefully we can add a link to the full stream on the show notes, themidside.com, because I think it's a great interview to watch all the way through. And I think there's so much good. You know, we talk about wanting to find some good spiritual fuel, like hearing a creator talk about how they create in this way is, I think, a pretty good spiritual fuel.
When you guys listen to me, right? You guys out there, Midsiders, you listen to me, right? And we're about to go into Life on the, or sorry, The Hopeful Romantic. And we're going to talk about art in this way. And I was talking about the art in that way to one of the people we talk about on the show. And he talked back to me like that. What more spiritual fuel do any of us need?
Yeah.
This is a man worthy of our support. And this is art worthy of viewing. And I doubt he will ever let us down. All right, so you're ready, William?
I'm ready.
Let's hit the music for The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off. When I wasn't focused on.
You heard me talk about Discord earlier. I quoted a Midsider who left a great comment in Discord, and people in Discord have already watched the interview between me and Zack Snyder, the few minutes I was able to speak with him, and they already gave their feedback and their thoughts on it. So if you were in Discord, you wouldn't even need to go to the show notes. You could already be there. So if you would like to join Discord and keep the conversation going during the week, just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode, and you can just click the link to join our Discord. William, something you said you were interested in talking about on the show and you're always asking me about is like new good music, and specifically new good pop punk. Well, yeah. One of my favorite pop punk bands released a new song on Friday the 13th. And it's a fucking banger. And I use that word very sort of facetiously, but also very seriously. And sort of the way Zack Snyder is ironic with, you know, the way he says things. It's fucking awesome. It's everything I look for in pop punk. I mean, I've met the We the Sharks lead singer. They were playing at a show out in California. There wasn't a lot of people there. So after his set, because they were just the opener, I sat there and I talked to him for a while. And he's really cool. Their music is awesome. And this song is all about just how everything is so fucked up because people are just searching for fame for second-handed reasons. I think it's an awesome song. You listened to it, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I think it's a great song. I'm definitely putting it on my rotation. You know, the I pulled the hook that you like so much because I liked it too. So this is
what I love about pop punk, right? So the song is called Shameless. It's by a band called We Were Sharks. And this is my favorite fucking part about the song, because pop punk at its best, this is what it is. This is what pop punk means to me.
And I got it in drop form, so it's really short, but here we go.
I just love the way that is in the song, where it's just like, fuck that, fuck you, eat pavement. It's so melodic, but it's also so aggressive. And it's just like, yeah, like, I don't have to fucking spend time on you people. Fuck you, you're stupid. And that's what I like about the song, right? It's like, everything is fine, everything is fine, everything is fucked. Fuck you, fuck that, or fuck that, fuck you, eat pavement. Like, it's just, it's, if you love pop punk, or you want to try out pop punk, listen to this song, Shameless by We Were Sharks. It's fucking tremendous. Now let's move on to movies, right? We always talk about movies on here, and I usually give a review. This week I saw, and I was going to see it on Friday the 13th, but I had to postpone it till Saturday the 14th because of the interview with Zack Snyder, which is kind of appropriate because the movie is framed. It starts on Wednesday the 11th, goes to Thursday the 12th, and then it goes to Friday the 13th. So this movie is called Freaky, and it's a body swap horror comedy by the director of Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. Happy Death Day, I don't know if you remember, William, that was a movie that I really, really praised on this show. Did you ever see Happy Death Day?
I didn't. It is in my queue, though. It's one of those movies I just... I feel like I need to be in the right mood to enjoy. It's one of those ones that's a little outside my genre, but
I'm a big horror comedy fan.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
right in my wheelhouse. And the thing that was great about Happy Death Day was it took the, you know, the time loop story and it mashed it with the slasher film, and it actually became a life affirming movie. It was about, you know, living your life and getting past your trauma and getting over your trauma. And there were elements of this here as well in this movie, where what this did, what it melded with the slasher film, was the body swap movie. So it's called Freaky, like Freaky Friday. And I have to imagine they wanted to call it Freaky Friday the 13th. I don't know why they didn't go with that title. That seems like it would have been the better title for this movie. Maybe they were worried about being sued or something. But in it, Vince Vaughn plays a serial killer, the Blissfield Butcher, who's a rumor and a myth. But he gets a dagger that's like an ancient Aztec dagger. And on the night of Thursday the 12th, he stabs the main girl, who's a blonde high school girl who's not very popular. And he stabs her, and then they wake up the next morning and they've body swapped. And the only way for her to get her body back is, as the butcher, she has to again stab her body, and then their bodies will switch back. Now, this movie, if you know anything about horror movies, it has a lot of gags, and I don't even want to spoil them. My favorite gag is one that involves a mask and a quarterback, and that's all I'll say, but it's a very, very well-done gag if you understand the history of, like, these type of horror movies with, like, Jason and Freddy Krueger and Mike Myers, that kind of stuff. Very well done. Hmm. What I will say about this movie is I do not think this is a social justice movie. But what this movie does is it takes the slasher film and it parodies it and makes a point again about, you know, overcoming your trauma and, you know, taking control of your life. And it does it by parodying the old 80s slasher films, but placing it in the modern context. So it's also like, if anyone ever saw the Heathers reboot that got canceled really quickly, because the Heathers reboot was making the new Heathers the social justice people. It's doing elements of that. But if you look at it from a collectivist lens, you're going to interpret this as, oh, well, this is about, you know, women taking the power back from straight white men, because Vince Vaughn is a straight white man killer and she is the, you know, the young, small girl. And there are elements of, like, when they're in each other's bodies, they understand why the other people's the way the other people's are. And there's particularly a scene at the very end where the killer talks about, like, understanding the psychology of a girl more, of a young teenage girl more now, because he was inside of her body. And she says things vice versa. That the movie has the potential to be, interpreted in that way by that crowd. I don't think it's intended by the audience. I do think it's intended on a, as a conversation about gender, but I don't think it's intended in the collectivistic way. And that was something that was really interesting to me, William, when I had that realization. I think a lot of things, like even when you look at Batman versus Superman, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, William, I think a lot of people take conversations that are meant to be about philosophical ideas and they apply them through a collectivistic lens, which perverts their meaning because you're applying it to the identities of people rather than individuals' thought processes in dealing with ideas.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective. You know, when you were discussing it, it's sort of like, maybe this is a really bad analogy, but it popped in my head. It's sort of like when you and I, you know, watched the trailer for Passion of the Christ back in the day, we were like, this is a snuff film trailer, right? But people brought in their sort of philosophical baggage, and this is such a religious experience, right? And I wonder if that's something similar that folks can bring in, you know, collectivism as some of that philosophical baggage that then, you know, diminishes their enjoyment of the film.
Or I wouldn't even say diminish. I would just say alter their enjoyment of anything they're seeing because they're assuming that, right? I mean, I don't want to get into a discussion about religion, but I mean, the whole Signs of the Cross is kind of a snuff film in itself. I mean, that's kind of baked into the Bible and the Jesus mythology, right? It's all he got whipped all this time. Showing it visually, I don't think really changes anything. I don't think it changes the story. It's just what meaning you assign to it. But that's an interesting way of looking at it, right? Because you love to make the religious comparison about social justice. And with the story of the Passion of the Christ, or even just the Signs of the Cross, you can look at it in two different ways if you're a believer or a non-believer. Well, it's the same thing with movies like this, right? Where you look at this and you can see it as purely, here's a conversation about gender and a conversation about horror movies and a conversation about high school life. Or you can look at this as a conversation about social justice.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, to take it out of that realm and into like a different realm. Like, you know, we talk about, you know, in art history, you talk a lot about how the classicists sort of, you know, they got trapped in these abstractions, right? They were just using this symbolism and abstractions and not really getting back. You know, that sort of led to the Romantic movement, right? Like getting back to the emotional side and the more individualistic side, right? And you know, so I wonder if, you know, if you took someone who only ever really consumes art in that sort of collectivistic or more symbolic, I don't think symbolic's not even the right word.
No, symbolic's not the right word.
I'm struggling to kind of articulate it, but if you get someone who's never really thought about or enjoyed art in that sort of individualistic manner, it may not even, you know, the meaning may not even get through, right? If you only watched it on that level.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think this movie will be seen that way. And I think this movie may be heralded, maybe praised for what it's not.
Interesting.
I mean, it actually has a pronoun. It won't be problematic. Making fun of the whole pronoun thing.
Everything that touches on trans issues not written by a trans person who toes the social justice line is automatically problematic. And here you have some gender swapping, so I'm sure it's going to be problematic.
I hope that's the case, because I don't want to see this movie praised for that. But, you know, we'll see the reaction to it. I'll say this. I think it was more on the level of Happy Death Day to You than Happy Death Day. My immediate reaction, my immediate thought is not, hey, this was as good as Happy Death Day. Happy Death Day was like a revelation for me. I was like, wow, I thought this was going to be fun, but this was really good. I don't think this movie's quite on that level. It's still very much worth seeing. It's still one of the better movies that has come out. I mean, compared to, you know, New Mutants, I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, this is the New Mutants isn't even in the same class as this movie. So I would still highly recommend seeing this movie. I would recommend seeing all of the movies by this director. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'm sorry. That's probably disrespectful. But I can't. But I would say see Happy Death Day. See Happy Death Day to you. See Freaky. These are all very much worth seeing. You will at least enjoy yourself. And that's ultimately what it's about, is enjoying yourself. Now let's talk about some other movies we could potentially enjoy or not in the future. Every Saturday, I post the movie, the trailers we're going to talk about for Trailer Takedown on themidside.com. I also throw it in the Discord, so again, you can join the Discord. You can watch those trailers on Saturday. You can watch them after you listen to the episode, or you can, you know, you can listen to them during. You can watch a trailer. We can talk about it. You can watch a trailer. We can talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Another Round is a movie starring Mads Mikkelsen. I believe it's a European movie. I'm not sure what language they're speaking. But it's about a group of friends who decide to test the fact that there was some supposedly a philosopher who said everyone operates better at 0.5 BAC, blood alcohol content. And they decide to test this fact, this hypothesis. And the whole movie is about them doing that. They can only do it when they're at work, though, not on their leisure time. And the movie seems to, the trailer seems to imply that they're showing it's a bad thing. So for me, I really like the content of this movie. I love Mads Mikkelsen, right? He's a great actor. I mean, if you want a show to watch, go watch him as Hannibal. Tremendous fucking show. Tremendous show. So there's a lot I really like about this trailer. The main thing I'm concerned about when watching this trailer is not even that it's in a foreign language and I would have to read subtitles all the time. I had no problem with the subtitles. I actually found the subtitles very engaging because of the intellectual content of them. The main thing I worry about is the mood and pacing of this movie. This movie seems like the music is very dour and that the pacing would be very slow. And I think that even though the content is engaging intellectually, that I may have trouble with it for that reason. And you know what? Maybe that's intentional. I'm going to be generous and say that's intentional because alcohol is a downer. It's a depressant that slows you down. So maybe that's why they're going for it. But I don't think it's, even though there's all this good stuff about this movie, I just don't think that I could possibly enjoy this. So this is a, have we ever given a tentative tackle before or a reluctant or a disappointed tackle? This is sort of a disappointed tackle for me.
All right.
Tackle.
Yeah, that's more disinterested, but you get what I'm going for.
That's the closest I got. We need to get Trailer Takedown.
Trailer Takedown, Dan, some do that. Emotions. Do a disappointed tackle. We need a disappointed tackle. We need that line read from you.
So, yeah, Justin, I watched this trailer, and like you did with the subtitles, I didn't mind. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. I was just getting a lot of naturalism vibes, you know? There's a way you can do a what if you did something and it can be very romantic. And then there's another way that you can do what if you did something and you just logically follow the consequences, right? And there's nothing there. There's no there, right? And I don't know, maybe it was just a couple of the scenes, you know, the drinking in the, was it a bathroom or whatever? And like, yeah, It looked like something that I would be disappointed in. So there was, and that's sad because, much like you, I'm really drawn to that actor. But I mean, the trailer did not succeed. I would not see this movie. So tackle.
I think you're right about the naturalism part of it. I think that's where it's coming from, and I think it shows that even though America's headed in this direction, it was a very European movie. And I think it shows the European artistic sensibilities versus the American sensibilities. And we could even use it as like a warning sign for us. Like, look at what you can do wrong with a great premise and a great actor.
Second trailer.
Superintelligence is an HBO Max original starring Melissa McCarthy. It's similar to the show Next on Fox, which I'm quite enjoying so far, by one of my favorite TV creators and writers, Manny Coto. In it, a superintelligence, an AI that can control the world, looks in on her life because she's an average person, and he wants her to redeem humanity. He says, "You have 3 days, or I'm going to blow up the earth because humanity is worthless." Okay, so somewhat interesting premise, right? Sort of kind of Matrix-y in the premise, right? Where the machines think humans aren't worth anything, so they're kind of taking over. But it's typical Melissa McCarthy comedy. And here's the thing. I don't dislike her. It's not like Kristen Wiig, who annoys the fuck out of me, or like Will Ferrell, who I cannot fucking stand. Melissa McCarthy's fine. I don't have a problem with her. So this is the kind of movie that, like, if Christine wanted to watch this, I would watch this. I would have no problem watching this. It's not like this is a movie where it's like I would get angry watching it or feel like it was a waste of my time. But this is also not a movie I'm going to go out of my way to watch. Tackle.
Tackle.
I was on the edge of my seat there. unlike you, I can't stand Melissa McCarthy. I don't get her comedy. And I don't find it funny very often. And I love this premise. I just wish it wasn't a comedy. And I know I have a high bar for comedies, so...
Then if you love this premise, you should watch NXT next. Or just not NXT, NEXT next on Fox.
All right, I'm going to have to do that because this premise seems interesting. The fact that it's a comedy and her comedy style just repels me. So, no.
Tackle. Third trailer.
Max Cloud is about a young girl in the 80s who only wants to play video games. And she plays this sci-fi video game about this typical 80s action hero. And then her dad gets mad at her, and for some reason she gets sucked into the game. So this is sort of like Jumanji meets The Last Starfighter meets Free Guy, that Ryan Reynolds movie that's going to come out. Because she goes inside the game and she becomes one of the characters. That's sort of the Jumanji part. But then that character, the Max Cloud guy, is real. I like a lot of this. I mean, it's sci-fi. It looks like it's meant to be comedy. It looks like it's meant to have some sort of commentary on life. My main hesitation is, and it may be that this is intentional, William, and I'm interested in what you think. It may be that it's intentional that some of the sets look really cheesy, hokey, and low budget. I'm thinking maybe that's the intent, but the way it was shot in the trailer, it looked very enclosed, it looked very small, and it made it difficult for me to immerse myself in the trailer. I'm thinking maybe that's the point. I'm hoping that when the overall movie is seen, this is not as much of a problem. So that's a concern I have going into it, but I'm still going to give this movie a chance. Hug.
Hug?
Yeah, Justin, I think I'm normally skeptical on comedies, but this one looks like it's something it could be fun. It could be something I enjoy. Obviously, I'm connected to gaming, so that looks cool. And then I wasn't as thrown off by the sets, but maybe just the way, like, the transitions between, like, the game and the people seemed a little low budget to me. So it was weird that's what you were thrown off by the sets, and I was thrown off by the, like, I was like, yeah, these effects look a little rough, you know, like, is that going to be a problem in the movie? So it's funny that you went on the sets and I went on the special effects. So, but much like you, I wouldn't say I'm excited, but I'm like intrigued. So this is going to be a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug. Final trailer.
Breach stars Bruce Willis, and he works on the final ship escaping Earth to go to New Earth. And while they're on the journey, aliens start taking over human bodies and trying to take over the ship. And then Bruce Willis has to lead a rebellion. As you can tell from the description, this movie sounds like a cross between The Fifth Element and Alien. It also looks like there's a zombie element to this. It doesn't look like they just, like, chest burst. It looks like they actually take them over like a parasite. I don't know if I need to say much else about that. I mean, honestly, you tell me that premise and Bruce Willis, I'm fucking sold. Like, does this look like the greatest movie ever? No. Does this look like a hell of a time? Hell fucking yeah. Hug.
Hug.
I'm gonna channel James here. Guns, Bruce Willis, action, explosions, I'm in.
You forgot science fiction.
And sci-fi, yeah, exactly.
Hug!
All right, that's a great way to end this episode, William. So what did we learn this trip? Go ahead.
I learned that your biceps are now internet famous. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
Jesus fucking Christ. I think this week is a big lesson in efficacy. That's what I learned about. Just there's a lot to, you know, coming out of this election, coming out of the last 4 years and coming out of all the media just making us feel like shit for a long time and trying to make us feel like shit, even with this lockdown and everything. They haven't won yet. And we can win. And the way we win is just you can succeed. You can be happy. And life is still great. And enjoy it. As always, thanks for stopping by the Midside. We really appreciate it. Thank you to our Liberty.me listeners. You know, we love you libertarians. You know, even though Ayn Rand had a problem with libertarians, I don't really have many problems with libertarians. So thank you. Remember, you can pick up my book, The Cut. TheMidside.com/The Cut. It's available in all formats there, including a signed format if you want a personal message from me. I'll even sign it pretty much to say anything you, almost anything you want. There are some things I will say no to, but when you submit the form for whatever you want, you know, who to be signed to and stuff, I give you an option that you can have whatever message you want there. So if you want me to sign it to, hey, Jim, the greatest person on the planet Earth, I'll sign that. Just don't try and make me like sign anything pro Antifa or anything like that. I have lines. And always, if you want to support us other ways, you can do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You can find those at themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. And as always, the number one way you can help this show is tell a friend. I think we're going in a really great direction. I really like how the show is going right now. I really liked this episode. I particularly enjoyed this episode, William. So thank you for everything in this episode. I think this is the best episode in our new format so far. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have an efficacious day. So I know by the time we publish this, it'll already be done if the weather cooperates. But the real crew mission for SpaceX is set up for launch. T-minus an hour and 41. So make sure you have that going when you're watching the football on the background.
Elon Musk is still allowed to launch people into space. He hasn't been canceled for that tweet about coronavirus. Coronavirus!
He hasn't been canceled yet because these astronauts are strapped in. They're sitting down there. Wiring them up, they're getting ready to go.
Can we get that that drop from Cardi B that whenever someone says coronavirus, she can go coronavirus? Can we get that drop?
Someone send it to me, and I'll add it to the machine.